This is Build and Analyze, a weekly news and discussion show about the world of iPhone, iPad, iOS, and mobile web development. The show's hosted by Marco Arment. He's the creator, founder, and force behind a few different things, but Instapaper is the first one. We have more to talk about there, I'm sure, today. It's Monday. Oh, by the way, I'm Dan Benjamin. It's Monday, October 15th, 2012. This is episode number 99. We have three sponsors, amazing sponsors. Harvest over at getharvest.com, hover.com, squarespace.com. These folks are here making the show possible, and we'll tell you all about them as the show continues. We would also like to say thanks very much to our friends over at cashfly.com, the fastest and most reliable CDN in the business. Don't believe me? Well, if you're listening to this show, it means they brought it to you, and hopefully your download was fast the way it should be. They're the ones making it fast, and we love them. And you can go learn more by going to cashfly.com. Let them know you heard about it here on 5x5. Marco Arment with lots of news. May I open the show simply by saying congratulations on your new app. If I had a sound effect of applause, I would be playing it now.
Thanks. You can get a bell like Merlin.
Yeah, I could get a bell. But seriously, big deal. And I'm so excited to see this. And please, let's start right there and get right to it, because this is a big deal and it's something you've been working on. And damn you for not telling me.
Isn't that great? You probably don't think it's that great.
I do think it's great.
My original plan with
this... Well, I don't think it's great that you didn't tell me, if that's what you mean.
My original plan with this was to reveal it on the show and to launch it on the show. And the reason I didn't do that... I'm going to get into the whole history of this thing, but the reason I didn't do that up front is mainly because, you know, for the release schedule, I expected 1 to 3 rejections, because Newsstand is very closely guarded. There's a lot of special rules for Newsstand apps. In addition to that, it's just complex because you have auto-renewing subscriptions and all sorts of special Newsstand APIs and the whole concept of issues and issue management, all the storage management of the issues being able to be deleted at any time by the system without telling you. So it's very complex, and it's there's a lot of special rules for Newsstand. So I knew I'd get rejected a couple of times at least. And what I didn't expect, though, was that, you know, when Apple wants to feature something in the App Store, they don't really tell you you're going to be featured on this day, but they do ask you for promotional assets. They'll ask you for, like, a graphic to use on that big banner spot if they want to use you there or something like that, you know. So, and while my app was waiting for review, they asked me for that. So there was kind of, there was a chance I might be featured. And that's if you're cool. going to be featured, you pretty much have to release it on a Thursday, because that's when they change the features. And they kind of, again, it's all, you know, there's a lot of unwritten rules and a lot of implied actions. But the gist of it is you should really release your app on a Thursday. But my app kept getting, you know, I was releasing it in the middle of iOS 6 and iPhone 5 updates of everybody. So review was taking a little bit longer. It was taking, you know, instead of taking a few days, it was taking more like 7 or 8 days or even a little bit longer sometimes. Because, you know, they just had a big backlog. By the way, I sound like crap because I spent all weekend shouting in loud bars at Singleton.
Yeah. You don't sound that bad. This could be a good sound for you.
Maybe this is my new sexy voice.
I like it. Bringing sexy back.
Yeah. So, anyway, yeah. So the original rejection, everyone was asking me to explain why it got rejected and why I had to appeal that rejection.
Part of the conditions of it being accepted are that you never reveal why it was not accepted.
I don't think they asked me to do that.
Okay.
You know, Apple really tries to communicate outside of Apple as little as possible, because, you know, it's not, again, I've said in the past, it's not because they want to be dicks about it. It's because Apple has such a strong culture of secrecy, and that's so important to them. And you can see, you know, when that is a little bit leaked out, like when a parts supplier leaks a part and kind of blows a whole product introduction, like blows a surprise, like we're probably never going to be surprised by an iPhone launch again, because we keep getting all these parts.
Exactly. And now we know all about
the... so many of them, you know?
Yeah. And now we know about the iPad Junior. It's coming out.
Yeah, we know about that, yeah. And we've already seen like leaked case backs and stuff like that. So we kind of can we have a pretty good idea of what it looks like already, and you know, so there's not, you know, there's not a lot of surprise anymore, and that really hurts Apple, and it kind of takes away some of the magic. So anyway, they have this whole culture of secrecy, and so it's not that the employees want to be withholding to you. It's that they want to make sure they don't get in trouble. They don't lose their jobs. They don't blow a product launch themselves, or they don't, you know, they don't cause trouble. And everything Apple does is under such scrutiny by especially the tech press, but now even the mainstream press, that, you know, if a reviewer says the wrong thing to somebody or makes a statement that you know, suggests that there are new rules in place that no one else knew about that might be controversial or something like that, then that could blow up into a big press thing and could really suck for them. So they really just try to avoid that. And I can kind of understand why. You know, it makes sense why, when you look at all the scrutiny they're always under and how any email that they send to a developer immediately gets posted to, you know, Apple rumor sites and everyone starts trashing them and it becomes a big thing on Consumer Reports. So it makes sense why they are so reasonably restrained in their communications. So a lot of what you get from them is implication, and a lot of it is just kind of, you know, you kind of have to figure out for yourself what they're really saying, which I guess is what implication means. So anyway, so I had to really launch on a Thursday.
Yeah.
And but I really didn't have that much say over which Thursday, because that kept being pushed back by delays and by rejection and by the appeal and everything. Anyway, the reason it was rejected was the reviewer was citing the rule, I think it's 2.12, I should look this up. It's the rule that basically says that your app has to have some kind of lasting value and can't just be like a repackaged website. And it has to have some kind of meaningful content or features. And they said that about my app. They said, this app only has 5 articles. You should really consider adding more articles or adding images and stuff like that. And it was, you know, basically like a formulated response using that rule. So my appeal was basically like, hey, this is actually a newsstand app, and this is just issue 1. And so, of course, issue 1, you know, when there's only 1 issue, it's going to have very little content, but over time, this will be added to on a regular basis. That's kind of the point of a publication, you know? And I think launching pretty much any newsstand app that is not based on an existing publication, that is a new publication, almost any newsstand app would fall under this rule and be caught by this. So I wrote the appeal, and then like about, you know, a few days later or something, I forget how long it was, but they basically just contacted me and they said, all right, you're approved. Like they didn't say, you're right, we, you know, we screwed up. They just said, okay, you're approved. So I was like, okay,
wow,
great. That's Apple, you know, as I said, like they really try to communicate as little as possible just to avoid getting themselves in trouble. And I totally understand that. So anyway, that is why it was released on a Thursday, and that is why it was so close to Singleton, mm-hmm. because it wasn't supposed to be, but it just kept getting pushed back until that point.
Have you had a chance to listen in any depth to the Hypercritical that John Syracuse and I recorded where we discussed this?
I did. Yeah. I listened to the whole thing. I listened yesterday on the way home. I even used a little bit of international data to download part of it. Before I realized I was still on international data and paused the download on Downcast.
Just a little, just the silent scream.
I thought it was going to be like another Mad Men thing.
Yeah. You know, one of the questions that John and I were sort of wondering was how much of that was, and you've answered the question, but how much of that was sort of planned, but bigger is what if you had not had it approved? Would that have changed your plans for your topics and discussion and stuff like that at the conference?
You know, my talk for the conference really wasn't based on the magazine at all. My talk in the conference, I actually wrote most of the talk this past summer before I started working on the magazine. And what I was basically checking, or what I was basically talking about, was scaling your career. You know, like what Syracuse has said, like, you know, figuring out, okay, well, I want to be a writer. Well, the way you become a writer is you just start writing. And then eventually you kind of are a writer, and no one's going to like bless you with that and give you a piece of paper that says that. But eventually you become that by just doing that. And so the talk was mostly about that kind of stuff. And I didn't really mention the magazine until like the very end. I had like two sentences about it, basically saying, and now I'm also a magazine editor because I just started doing it. That was it. So if it hadn't launched in time, I would have had to cut maybe a minute and a half of the talk. And that would have been it. So it wouldn't have been that bad. I'm glad it did launch beforehand though. Just so that, you know, I could talk about it. And everyone there was really very nice and congratulatory that I just launched a product. So that was really nice. Anyway, so let me go back a little bit. I want to talk about why I made the magazine and how it came to be. Because this is something I haven't really had time to write out anywhere else yet.
Yeah.
So last summer, you know, not this past one, summer 2011, when iOS 5 was announced and Newsstand was announced at WWDC, I was immediately drawn to it because I could see that Newsstand apps had special privileges that, you know, as Syracuse said, Newsstand apps can do things that regular apps can't. And so I immediately thought, I wonder if Instapaper should be a Newsstand app in a future update.
Yeah.
So I talked to some of the Apple people, you know, because WWDC, you can kind of go up to them after the talk and you can say, hey, you know, what do you think about this? And you know, it's very similar talking to them in person as it is talking to them over the phone or on Twitter or by email.
So in other words, you get almost nothing back.
Well, no, that's not true. you get almost no definitive statements back, but you get a lot of implication, right? And so you can really kind of figure out what you can do, what you can't do, why things are a certain way, what, you know, what the future might bring. There's a lot of implication always. Because again, those people don't want to get in trouble either. So basically the suggestion was, well, you know, Newsstand is really for things that look like magazines. Like you have to have issues, and every issue has to have new content and a new cover image, and it should really kind of be packaged up as an issue. And it can't really just be for like a stream of articles that the user adds and everything. Like it wasn't really a very correct fit for Instapaper at all. And the other issue with Instapaper is that I don't own the content that you save to Instapaper. And you could tell the Apple people, like they hadn't really considered that, or they didn't really know what to say about that, but you could tell they were kind of iffy on that. So it basically sounded like I probably shouldn't be a Newsstand app. It's also weird because, you know, Newsstand is this folder on your device, and Newsstand apps have to be in that folder. You can't make a Newsstand app that is not in that folder, and you can't have a non-Newsstand app in that folder. So I wasn't sure that I wanted to pull Instapaper out of somebody's regular Springboard screen, wherever they had it, and stick it in this weird folder during an update. That would be kind of strange. So there were a bunch of reasons why Instapaper really couldn't and still shouldn't, because those all still apply, really couldn't and shouldn't be a Newsstand app itself. So I kind of just planted this idea in my head, like I really want to do something with Newsstand someday. And then, you know, I went on doing Instapaper 4.0 and doing everything else I was busy with last fall. And then this earlier this year, when I rebranded Give Me Something to Read, yeah, to The Feature.
The Feature. Way of the, you know, Feature.
Yeah. Nice. I wanted to really put a lot of effort behind that and really get it out there. So, you know, I made it more visible in the Instapaper app and, you know, put a little bit more attention on it. And I don't know if you remember, when I was first implementing, or when I released the Instapaper geofence background downloading feature, the background location downloads, remember when I said that I was on the phone with a really helpful app reviewer for minutes,
yeah,
and
yeah,
he was basically explaining what I could and couldn't do? Well, the geofence background downloads were the first half of that conversation.
Mm.
The second half, I was talking to him about Newsstand. And so what I was asking about was the idea that I had back then was not only to do this background download thing, but also I wanted to make a separate app that would be a Newsstand app for the feature. And it would package up the feature's articles into its own Newsstand app. And it would kind of be, and my idea would be for it to be free. And it would just kind of be a promotion for Instapaper. not really like a free version of Instapaper, but kind of like in the way that it would basically have the whole Instapaper interface, but just have those articles in it. And again, I kind of got the impression from the reviewer that, like, you know, I could maybe try it and it might be permitted, but because I didn't own that content, like, it'd be a little bit weird, and it was a very strange gray area that I probably shouldn't try. And even if I did try it once, it might not last very long. Maybe they would tighten the rules up in the future and it would be disallowed. So it just sounded like a bad idea to do that. So I thought, all right, no more, you know, I guess I can't have the feature be a newsstand app.
Yeah.
And
so it's interesting to me that your thought process, if I can interrupt you for a second.
Sure.
Your thought process was, what do I have already that would let me do this, as opposed to, I'm going to build something new? And I've noticed this throughout the discussions that we've had over the last few years, is on the one hand, you're very, 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 very concerned about adding any feature. And I think this is why you've got a lot of fans. You're very concerned about adding any kind of new feature to anything that you already do. But at the same time, you're seemingly like equally wary of launching yet another new thing. And it seems like you walk kind of a fine line between this. Am I right? Or is this?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And one big part of that is just, I know that if I launch something really different and new, it's going to be a big time commitment on my part.
Yeah.
You know, a big ongoing time commitment, like, right. Oh, now I have another business, a separate thing. You know, the feature was something that is already running, and the guy who edits it, Richard Dunlop Walters, he is like totally hands-off management. Like, I don't have to manage him at all. He is not a time cost on me at all, which is awesome. It's exactly how I need things to be to get this kind of stuff done.
Right.
You know, so, and we should mention also a bit of hypercritical follow-up, which John Siracusa feels very guilty about.
Yeah.
He mentioned that I had these three things, Instapaper, the feature, the magazine, and the brief. And the brief is not mine. The brief is... Richard launched this site. Have you've seen Evening Edition by Mule?
Yeah.
Evening Edition is this thing by Mule that we should put in the show notes, that it summarizes the world news, and it's generally political news for the most part. Summarizes world news into like 4 or 5 paragraphs every day. And so you can kind of get an idea of what's going on in the world without having to read the entire paper or the entire world's publications. So it's pretty good. And Richard, the editor of formerly Give Me Something to Read, now The Feature, created his own thing called thebrief.io that is basically that for tech news. It takes this formula that Evening Edition pioneered only a few months ago when it launched, and everyone loves it. He took that and applied it to tech news. So now there's thebrief.io, which is a site for summarized tech news of the day, so you don't have to go and read like the 100 posts from Engadget or whatever. So it's really useful, really nice. And but that I have nothing to do with that. He did that all on his own. So a minor correction to John Siracusa. And so the whole what this sounds like so far, my history with trying to get into newsstand, what it sounds like is that I have a solution and I'm looking for a problem to it, you know, not the correct vice versa. Like, I'm trying to get into newsstand.
Right.
And I should really talk about why. Why is newsstand so valuable? Why did I want so badly to be in it? And the quick reason is that I think it's an untapped gold mine for a few reasons. First, it has incredibly strong promotion in iOS. You know, it's starting with iOS 5, it is this folder on your device that you can't delete, and at least, you know, without hacking or doing crazy stuff that most people won't do, you can't delete it, you can't hide it. All you can do is just, you know, you can move it around to maybe a low end screen of your springboard, but you know, it's this folder that's going to be here regardless. And when you open that folder, if it's empty, it prompts you to go download something to fill it. and even if it's not empty, there's a store button in there. And so you open that folder and it links you right to the category in the App Store that are apps of that type. And most of them aren't very good. So it seemed like this was a massive untapped gold mine. And there's also a few other things about Newsstand that I really was interested in doing. One, you know, all Newsstand apps have the ability to, at most once a day, push a background download to the app. You can send a push notification, and the app just launches in the background without it doing, you know, without the user having done anything, and it can download new content during that time if it wants to. And this is like, you know, for Instapaper, I have to use the geofence thing, which is really a hack. The geofence thing is this giant, complex setup to do background downloads periodically because I have no other way to do them. And with the magazine, I can just do background downloads directly. I send a push notification. I mean, you can only do it once a day, but when you're publishing every 2 weeks, who cares? You can do that directly. And so it's, you know, it allows you to avoid all the weird workarounds that you have to do otherwise. So I really, really wanted background downloading. And that's the number one thing I wanted for Instapaper when I was seeing if that could be a magazine app. The other thing is, you know, this is kind of a context, you know, because it's on the Springboard, like this is kind of this place that you go when you want to sit back and read something. And so I'll open up Newsstand and browse. Like, it's not like I want to use an app, I want to check in on an app. It's like, I want to browse or I want to read something. This is where you go on your phone to do that. So again, it just kind of makes sense that I wanted to be in there. Newsstand apps also are the only type of app that can use auto-renewing subscriptions. And this is twofold. This is two very, very big benefits. Well, there's three, actually. There's the whole personal data thing, which I hate. But yeah, so I should point out, I wish I pointed out everywhere else too.
Yeah.
When you start an auto-renewing subscription, iOS prompts you with a dialogue that says the publisher of whatever would like to have your personal information. It would like your email address, name, and zip code, I think, are the three things you give them. Do you want to allow this? And you can say yes or no. And the publisher can actually offer you an incentive. If you agree to this, they can like give you a free 2 months or something. So the whole system is really set up for this. I really don't want that information. I really don't want to collect that information. The dialogue is incorrect in that it says the publisher would like this information, because for me, I would not like this information. I would really rather not even have it. But when you have an auto-renewing subscription, you have to, like, that dialogue is just part of the flow. You have no control over it. It just comes up when the people are processing the purchase for that. You can't disable it. It is bound in. So that's annoying. But anyway, the other benefit, if you're into a creepy business, you could use that information, I guess. And by the way, I still haven't found out where to actually download that information in iTunes Connect. I looked around because I'm curious to see, like, how do I even get this? How is it even given to me? And I can't find it. maybe it's like only after a month. Who knows? Anyway, it doesn't really matter. I'm probably going to forget about it. So the other things that auto-renewing subscriptions offer are, first of all, a free trial. This is huge. We've talked so many times about how useful it would be, what it would do to pricing of apps if iOS supported a really good method of free trials. And it doesn't. You know, in reality, iOS, you know, you're actually prohibited from having like a time-bombed trial app. You can only do something like have kind of an app with basic features and then use in-app purchase to upgrade it to new features. You can do that, but you can't really do a free, like a true trial the way we usually think about it. With Newsstand apps, you can set a trial on these auto-renewing subscriptions. And people often ask why I picked 7 days. And the answer is the only choices are 7 days, 1, 2, 3, 6 months, or a year. So there's nothing between a week and a month. And I thought a month was too long. Right. You know, like I wanted to do 2 weeks, so it would be like one issue interval. I couldn't do that. And so I thought, all right, fine. I'll do 1 week and make it, you know, it's kind of weird. But so there's that. And when you think about what that, you know, what is a free trial? What does that do to the economics of the app? That totally changes things, right? I think. I'll find out, I guess. And then the other thing is, because they're auto-renewing subscriptions, the pricing, the revenue model is completely different. I'm not sure I would launch an app that has a potentially limited audience. Like, you know, this app is only going to appeal to people who speak English. It's only going to appeal to like people who really want to read the like kind of longer stuff and people who know some of these writers. Like, it's not, this app is not going to have, as far as I can tell, or as far as I can predict, at least, this app is never going to be as popular as Instapaper. It just doesn't have the right, you know, it doesn't have that broad of an appeal. But this app can do auto-renewing subscriptions, which means if I'm charging $2 a month, I can potentially make up to $24 a year, minus 30%. But I can potentially make up to $24 a year from each person using it. And that's really powerful. When you think about what that does, again, what that does to the economics of the app, that means that I can afford to incur higher costs on my end, whether that's making the app better itself, or in my case, what I'm probably going to be using most of this money for is paying writers more or buying more content. That is really powerful. And that's something that, you know, I'm starting to see why Newsstand is set up the way it is, why they have these renewing subscriptions. I think it's really because, like, now that I'm in the publisher business, like now that I am a magazine publisher, I can kind of see like, well, I kind of have to know how much money I'm making next month, or at least have some idea. You know, with regular app sales, you really don't know. You can kind of guess that maybe you'll make roughly what you made this past month, or maybe, oh, a new iPhone's going to come out, maybe you'll make a little bit more, or it's the middle of the summer, nothing's happening, maybe I'll make a little bit less. But when you're like buying articles for people and spending big money on future things, it helps a lot to have this renewing subscription so that you can have a pretty good idea, like, okay, I know I gain roughly this many subscribers each month. I know I lose roughly this many each month, but those things probably are fairly consistent. And so, you know, like, nothing's really going to happen that's going to really massively impact your income for next month that should be unexpected to you. So that is very, very nice. And yeah, so, you know, this enables different kinds of businesses. I couldn't do the magazine the way it is today without auto-renewing subscriptions. I really couldn't do it. So it really does make sense why they did this. And, you know, when you look back at Apple's history with publications and their apps, Newsstand seemed like a big giveaway at the time to the publishers. Like, suddenly they could do things that no one else could do and all this stuff. And I should point out also, I've seen a few comments that say something like that the magazine is exactly what Newsstand was designed for. Finally, I'm using it the way it was designed. No, believe me, I'm not. Believe me, I'm wedging myself in there. This is not, Newsstand was not designed for this. Newsstand was designed for the New York Times, the New Yorker, you know, Vogue, like all those magazines. It was designed for old publishers. It was very much not designed for me. The entire APIs, the way they're promoted in the app store, the way they use the cover images and everything. Believe me, this is not what Newsstand was designed for. I'm pushing it in there, and I'm hoping to like the way an ivy vine gets in a little tiny crack in a rock and just expands it and eventually tears the whole building right, down,
breaks the whole thing down.
I'm kind of hoping to do that with Newsstand. I got like a little foothold in there, and now I'm just gonna like push and start expanding with this format. And I assume that other people are gonna adopt this too at some point. You know, I'm sure that in 6 months or a year, there's going to be other publications that look very similar to the magazine that saw this and got, sure, quote, inspired.
And I actually wanted to talk to you about it's probably too early to speculate or to talk about it, but I wanted to kind of get your take on the potential future, the future of this app as it relates to maybe your bigger plan as a publishing mogul. But specifically, like, you've got two apps now, really, that you're supporting. And, you know, managing a publication is a whole different kind of work than, you know, like writing code for your existing app and adding features and doing user stuff. So I'm curious to hear, like, if you've ramped up for this in any way, or if you've, hired someone else, or if this is all just you kind of curating it. I want to hear about how you're working with the authors. I want to hear about all of that stuff. Is that stuff you're ready to talk about?
Sure.
Before you do, can we do our first sponsor?
Yeah, let's do that.
First sponsor is Harvest. These guys are great. We use these guys for all of our time tracking and everything here at 5x5, and I've been using them for ages and ages before that. But what's awesome about them is they take care of everything. They manage all the back office tasks so that you can focus on delivering your best to your clients or managing your projects without the headache. I mean, this is what they do, especially focused on time tracking. They do a lot more than that. But I mean, how do you do it? So like you start a timer, you can do that from your web browser. They have a desktop app for Mac. They've got iOS apps. It doesn't matter. They just want it to be painless. And it's smart. Like they have really cool things like with the Mac app. Let's say you start working on something and then you have idle time of like 10 minutes where it's clear you weren't doing anything. You can have the timer be aware of that so that you're not billing clients when you're not actually working. All of this stuff, it's all built in. They have visual time reports because at the end of the day, you're always focused on a budget. So you want to be able to see this stuff. How far is the project going? How close are we to what we told the client we were going to bill? It's all built in. You want to keep your clients happy. And they even have invoicing built in. So you get a really professional looking invoice, multiple payment options on the website so you can get paid for your work. It's really, really great. And you can try it free for 30 days. And if you don't fall in love with it over whatever you're using now, which most likely is like what I was doing, like typing something up in Pages or Word, you just let the trial expire. You don't even have to give them a credit card. So they made a special URL just for our listeners. And going to this URL is a great way to learn more about Harvest. It's also a great way to support the show. Getharvest.com/5x5. Remember, you don't have to keep using it, but if you would like to keep using it afterwards, use the code 5x5 and you'll get 50% off your first month. And that's good through another month from now, middle of November. So check them out, getharvest.com/5x5, 5x5 promo, 50% off first month. Check them out. Good stuff. All right, so tell me, how did you ramp up for this? Speaking of tracking time of your employees.
Right.
Have you staffed up? Do you now have 40, 50 people like the daily? And
they had more than that. They had like 120 or something. I think they laid off so that they could get down to 120.
So, I mean, how many hundred people do you have? And what are they doing? How does it work? Where are you housing? Where in Brooklyn are you housing these folks?
Yeah, because that's a good place to get a big staff. Where it's really expensive to live.
Downtown Brooklyn.
Right now it's just me. I would like to hire an editor at some point. First of all, I'm not that good of one, and I'm not sure if I ever will be. I'm good at being a content editor. I'm only okay though at being a copy editor. So I am probably going to hire a copy editor at some point. And you know, with the magazine, I had two worries up front when I was thinking about this, you know, doing this as a thing. One worry was that I wouldn't get enough subscribers. And it's too early to say whether that's going to be the case or not. So far, the initial response was very good. So, you know, it's hard to tell because they haven't been billed yet. And so maybe once it comes time to pay, which will be this coming Friday, will be the first round of them, because it's still the free trial period. So once it comes time to pay, then maybe some of them will drop off. I expect that. And then every month, when it gets near time to pay, I'm sure some of them will log in and cancel it, because Apple sends the neat little email saying, these things are about to renew, so you can log in and cancel them if you want to. So I'm sure there's going to be some degree of drop-off, possibly a big degree of drop-off. I don't even know what to expect yet. But assuming the degree of drop-off isn't too big, then I think we're okay. I think this is sustainable financially so far. But we'll see what happens when people have to pay. So that worry is no longer a concern. The other worry is I wonder if I'll be able to get enough content to make each issue really good.
Now let me interject something here. And this is something that I didn't realize Newsstand could do. And you kind of touched on this a little bit earlier. But you're talking about the drop off. You're talking about people signing up. I waited because I wanted to do it right now during the show. That was my plan. Was to actually become, you know, start my trial. And so I just did that like 5 seconds ago. And there's a couple questions that I have, but one of them is it asks if it can share my information with you. Of course I said yes. Like, what would you do with that when it comes to like seeing people drop off and seeing people come back in is what I'm asking.
I don't know.
Like,
I,
assuming that you finally do get access to this.
So I can kind of like, I'd be able to know like if somebody canceled and then re-signed
that's what
up
I'm,
later.
That's what I'm asking for. Cause you're talking about drop-offs and I'm wondering,
right.
I had waited to do it now. When that actually happens, let's say you get this, can you do anything with that?
The answer is yes, I could. I mean, obviously there's all sorts of analysis you can do on that data, and I can make demographic data of where everyone lives and who knows. I could certainly do all those things. I really don't think I want to. I don't think I need to.
But are you unique in this sense of not?
Oh, sure.
Because yeah, that's the thing, is that so many people, like, I could have tapped no when it prompted me for that information, and like, I guess I would be just totally anonymous. But because it's you, I don't care. I'm like, yeah, sure, share my information. What do I care? But when it's somebody else, I would definitely say no. Like, you're probably the only, and I would probably have shared this with you even if I had not known you and done a show with you, because like, I feel like you're safe. You know what I'm saying? But like, it seems like that kind of information is something that would eventually be interesting and valuable for you to know when you are seeing those drop-offs. Like, can that information provide you with the reason for why? Because I remember back when I worked at a hosting company, every time we would send out a newsletter, we'd get cancellations. Like, every time.
What do you think that is?
Like, because it would remind
you
them.
Like, you were reminding people that you exist and that you're charging them money?
Exactly. And like, we went and the guy that ran the company even had a percentage. He even had a percentage of like how much we would lose each time. And it was right. And it was scary. And I'm like, oh, you know, dude, let's send out a newsletter. He's like, let's not do another one this month. I mean, like, why not? And he'd say, oh, well, because, you know, you're losing, we'll lose customers. Like, really? And he explained the whole thing to me of like how it works. So I'm fascinated by that whole concept of, you know, because when you publish a new one, in a way, aren't you kind of taking a risk of saying, well, this is going to remind people that they have it and maybe we're going to lose them. Like, I'd be curious to see how it coincides with the release dates.
Certainly I am taking a risk by reminding them that they're paying me $2 a month.
Right.
However, Apple's reminding them anyway. Like, Apple will send that email saying this is about to auto-renew a few days before it does every month anyway. So they're being reminded on a regular basis. They're not going to just forget about this and give me money forever. So, you know, so it already is kind of being spoiled. And I think obviously if I didn't publish an issue, I would get a lot of people very angry about that, and that would cause some cancellations. But, you know, if you look at the existing magazine and newspaper industries, which are very similar, they really need all this information because they don't make all their money from subscription revenue. They make so much. Usually, they make so much more of it from advertising that, you know, they're really not in the subscription business. The subscription is kind of just like a side income for them, and so, if they have all this information for advertising, they can do all sorts of creepy things with it. They can send you junk mail. They can sell your address to junk mail companies.
Right.
They can send you offers. Like, that's why when you subscribe to a magazine, if you ever let that subscription lapse, you will see, first of all, that they'll keep sending you stuff even after it lapsed, because they'll keep sending you magazines, hoping that, oh, you'll remember and resubscribe. Also, they want to keep their numbers up. They want to be able to tell advertisers, look, we're going to have X people that get this issue. And then they start, like, desperately, they'll send you offers. Oh, just now we'll cut the price. Well, now you can renew for only $5 a week or whatever, or, you know, probably less than that. Now you can renew for $15 for the whole year. Just please stay on. And it's, they will spam you like crazy forever. And then you'll notice, you know, you still, when you sign up for a new magazine, you'll notice your junk mail increases in a certain demographic type. Like, if you sign up for something fancy like the Atlantic, you'll start getting more like high-end credit card offers and stuff like that. Like, I don't even know that whether the Atlantic does this or not, but that's just an example of what might happen. Actually, you know what? You know what's responsible for the most junk mail of all? Is when you move and you tell the post office to forward your mail to the new address.
Really?
The post office sells your email, sells your new address and the fact that you just moved. I'm pretty sure, because that's every time I've moved, that's happened. I've gotten a massive amount of spam right after that.
So the magazine today is number one, or I don't know if it's number one, but it's first. So I'm assuming that means it's number one in new and noteworthy here in the newsstand store. That's kind of cool. This is the first time that I used, I mean, I think when newsstand first came out, I downloaded one thing into it, but I got rid of it immediately. And this is the first thing that I have in there. And I think for a lot of people, this is going to be the first thing that they use in newsstand.
I've heard that response a lot. That a lot of people are saying this is their first app in newsstand. Like, finally, I can use newsstand. They move it from, you know, the last screen of their phone up to the front or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, it's awful. And John Syracuse very eloquently explained on Hypercritical the downsides to newsstand again. But, like, I can't just launch the magazine. I have to tap newsstand and then tap the magazine. Not a big deal. But man, it would be really cool if we didn't have, you can't put newsstand in another folder. We've talked about all this. Is this anything you've asked those guys about? Like, can you change this? Because it'd be really cool to get rid of that stupid newsstand thing.
I haven't really pushed far on that yet.
Mm. So you do know the answer. That's cool. We can talk about it often.
Okay. All right. So I want to go back and talk about I mentioned in my introductory post, I mentioned that I was in a good position to do this. That, you know, one of the reasons why I wanted to do the magazine was that I was in a good position to do it. And so a few people have asked me to expand on that, and I'd like to, obviously. You know, I looked at what I had. You know, I have a platform and a brand. Where I have a sizable audience on Twitter and right. on my blog and on here. Of people who would like this sort of thing. I have friends who could be writers for this thing. I have the Instapaper code base to draw on. And I had some free time during the summer because I kind of want to wait to really do Instapaper 5.0 until I can safely require iOS 6 for it, and then I can do a whole bunch of better code in a lot of places. So I'm kind of waiting on that until the spring, I think. And so I had like a couple of months. I'm like, you know, I don't really have to work on that yet. What else could I do here? And it's also, I wanted to diversify my income as well. If you think about how competition works for Instapaper versus how competition works for the magazine, it's completely different.
Right.
You know, Instapaper, I'm competing in a zero-sum market because most people don't use more than one Read Later client. So I'm competing in a very, very competitive market. There's tons of resources fighting against me as my one guy with Instapaper. There's tons of companies now trying to claim that spot in that market. And overnight, like I don't think I can properly explain the stress that I feel about losing ground with Instapaper. Like every morning I dread checking Twitter or whatever we're calling app.net or whatever, because I think that overnight a new competitor might have launched and my business is now gone. That I know that probably sounds crazy. That probably sounds severe. That is really how I think.
No, I know exactly what you mean. And it's like you wake up, and Merlin, I've talked about this. Like you wake up one morning, everything's just like, it's over. Oh, well. Like what?
Yeah.
What do you do now? It's done. You're done. And right. that kind of fear is, I think, what every independent business owner should probably have, right? Like it keeps you going.
Right. And you know, the degree to which that's a realistic scenario depends on what exactly you're doing and what kind of competition could exist for it. And of course, you know, this is like not considering things like legal issues or other things that could be a big problem for you that aren't competition. So this is just considering competition. And so yeah, I really was feeling a lot of stress about that, and I was starting to think, okay, so I have some income from my blog, I have some income from the podcast, you know, I'm starting to build some other side businesses, but I really need something else, some other like significantly sized business, so that if Instapaper goes away, I don't have to like lose my house, you know, and. And also just that stress of waking up to that every morning thinking, oh my God, what if this is the morning where there's another big competitor that launched and now I lost all my customers to them because they're that much better than me. I really wanted to help neutralize that just by diversifying a little bit. And so the way competition works with a publication with, you know, in the content business really, is that usually a content business's downfall is usually not the fault of competition. It's usually the fault of them just unraveling, like them starting to suck or that kind of, you know, that kind of problem. It's usually their own doing. And that's much more appealing to me because, you know, I want to be more in control of my destiny. That makes sense, right? That's, I think most people want that. And it's also not a zero sum market. You know, people who like good writing usually would want more of it. You know, it's like, and certainly everyone has limited time to read or to watch things or to amuse themselves in whatever ways they want to do that. Everyone has limited time, but there's a lot more, people have a lot more capacity for more good content than they do for more of the exact same type of app. So I really think that, you know, I wanted this kind of competition. That's, I don't think about competition with my blog. I don't think about competition with this podcast. I'm not that concerned about people coming along and making their own developer podcast and stealing all the audience away from us. Like, I just don't think about that. Because I know that if we keep doing our job and we keep being interesting, that our audience is probably going to stay. Like that's just how it works. But that isn't how it works with feature-based apps at all. You know, people, app audiences are very fickle, and app services, everything. People are very fickle. Look at we all just left Twitter for the most part.
Yeah, well,
I mean, yeah,
I wouldn't go that far. But no, I mean, you make a really, really good point. Is that the tides can turn really, really quickly, and people don't. People who are outside of the space of like having that fear that you're describing, they don't realize how much a little turn, you know, a little change of the tides can like completely affect somebody's like livelihood and business and well-being.
Right. And the other thing is, you know, I think this will actually free me up to be a little bit more daring with Instapaper. You know, I have a number of ideas that I want to try for 5.0. And I mentioned last week that I might actually, you know, break it off and make it a separate app, a separate purchase, so I could be more experimental and more aggressive with the features that I add, the features I remove, and the requirements I have. So, you know, I require iOS 6. By having this other business going, by knowing that if I lose a few people on Instapaper, it's not the end of my house. Or my hose, but by knowing that, I feel like I can be more daring with that, and I can really do what I want to do, rather than playing it a little bit safe. And there's a few big things I want to do with Instapaper that are not, you know, quote safe. I do want to remove some features, and I want to add some big ones. And so I feel like, you know, I feel like this is better for me. It's better for Instapaper. It's better for people who want to read this kind of stuff because now it exists and before it didn't. So overall, I think this is great for Instapaper. And the reason why I'm in a good position to try it is, you know, so like, you know, I have the audience for this. I know where to advertise this. If I need to advertise, I advertise here. I advertise on your other shows. I advertise on other tech podcasts. Like, I know these people. I know you people. I am you people.
Right.
Title. Like I know how to get people who want to read this kind of stuff because I am that kind of person. And, you know, you guys hang out where I hang out. You guys listen to what I listen to. You guys watch what I watch. So, and most importantly, you guys read what I read. And, you know, I really, really, like, this is exactly the kind of product that I know how to launch. And I have Instapaper's entire code base and expertise that I can use, that I can build on. I know how to make an app, both design-wise and code-wise. I know how to make an app that can read articles offline and that can do it really well in a nice environment and have all these nice little features. I know how to do all that stuff already. I have all that stuff already in my head or in code or whatever.
And that's why this thing.
I have the writer relationships. I have.
Right.
I know so many good writers who can write for this. And if there's ever a gap in an issue, I can write for it. So, like, I feel like I really was in a very good position to try this, where the risk of me doing it, and I'm a programmer, so I got the coding quote for free, which of course, you know, there's opportunity cost there, but you know, effectively I got a really good deal on the coding. And so I feel like I'm in a very good position. If anyone else were to try this, they're taking a higher risk because they don't have one of these pieces or something, you know, like, or obviously some people do, but most people who would try this don't have one of these pieces that I have. So for them, it would be a higher risk. It would take higher investment. It would have, you know, it might get less attention on launch, something. There's some difference. And so for me, it was very clear that I could really do this, and it isn't that big of a risk to try. So that's why I said I was in a good position to do this.
Now, one of the things that John and I on Hypercritical were speculating about is, and you mentioned it just now, that you do have access to not only the experience, but probably a lot of code that you could use that makes doing this kind of thing more straightforward than it might for other people. Not that the code couldn't be written, but this is what you've been doing. Like, how much of, if you will share this, how much of Instapaper is in the magazine?
Not a lot, actually.
Really?
Honestly, I borrowed some of the like WebKit tricks for the HTML template to make it behave right on the iPad and stuff, but not much. Really, not much at all. You'd be surprised. Like, the whole data layer is all different. The storage layer is all different because it has to use the newsstand kit storage engine. The syncing is totally different. Because one thing is, I was very deliberate with this. There's no user accounts. The server has no concept of user accounts, which keeps the server very, very simple, keeps everything very simple for everybody. And that was a very deliberate decision. And I don't really ever want to add user accounts. And the server doesn't do any kind of syncing except for downloading content. Like, the server does not store your article position. iCloud does. iCloud is used to sync position between devices and what article you're currently reading. The server does as little as possible. The server just supplies the content, basically. And that was actually one thing. I was very concerned about server load on launch because I had no idea what the server load would be. It's pretty hard to test that with this kind of setup to know really what you can handle. And you, of course, have no idea how many downloads you're going to get that first day. It turns out the server load was awesome. It was low. I don't think it crossed 0.5 of a load average the whole day. So it was pretty great. And that's on a low-end line of VPS. But to answer your original question, there's very little of Instapaper in it. Most of what I brought to it from Instapaper was experience, not actual code being copied over. I copied a few utility classes and stuff, like just generic stuff, but nothing really that specific to Instapaper. And it is a totally separate business entity. It has its own LLC, and I have my own developer account separately for it. I really want to treat it as a separate business for the most part. Now, there is one exception to this, which you and John talked about for a few minutes. Whether Instapaper will and should support Pocket, Readability, and other Read Later services.
Right, and your response to this in the FAQ is LOL.
Right.
That's your official, that's the official corporate line.
I thought it was funny, you know, because people have, like, a few people have asked me about this. I really thought that this was obvious, that why would I add that? Of course I wouldn't add that. But a few people have actually tried to argue that with me, that, well, you should, if it's a separate business, you should add it, and you should do what's best for your customers. I even pissed off the founder of Pocket with that. Here's the thing. First of all, businesses are people. There are people behind every business. And I have had, you know, I don't want to go into detail now, but I've had personal problems. I have been personally offended by the founders of both of those companies.
Really?
And you know, who cares about going into it, but I really have a personal problem with them. I would be much more likely to add support for Safari Reading List or Evernote Clearly or any of the other competitors than those two. There is no way I will ever add support for those two as long as I'm in control of this company. It's a personal problem there. And you can say there's businesses here. Yeah, there's business entities, but there's people behind them. People run them. And if I support that business, I'm supporting those people. And I will never, ever feel good about supporting Pocket or Readability ever. So that's part one.
How do you really feel about this?
And I'm not saying every one of those companies is bad, but, you know, the people who gain the most, I have problems with. Part two, and you know, that's by the way, similar to Steve Jobs' position on Android. You know, he, like what he said, according to his book, and I think a few other places cited it too, like he, you know, the whole, I think he said he wanted to go with thermonuclear on them. Like, he didn't care about getting a settlement out of them. He didn't want money from Google. Like, he didn't, he just was so offended by Android and what, and how Google went about doing it, that, you know, there was no business behind it. It was personal, right? This is how this is for me. I will never add support for those services because we have a personal history that is not good. And I take offense to them on many principles. Okay. So, the other thing is that Instapaper pays my bills. Instapaper pays my health insurance. Instapaper is my business. And if the magazine ever gets bigger, that's great. However, Instapaper got me here. And if it weren't for that, the magazine wouldn't exist. If it weren't for Instapaper magazine, I wouldn't have been able to afford to create it. And I wouldn't have time to devote to edit it and anything else. So these aren't entirely separate businesses in that like personal history way. Like, I'm still the same person who does both of these things. And if I do anything that could hurt Instapaper with the magazine, that's a really stupid thing to do. Like, why would I do that? So, it'd be like blocking my blog from Instapaper. Like, why would I do that? So, that's why I thought it was so obvious. Why would anybody ever add this? Some people really did respond negatively to the LOL attitude. Maybe I should change it. But I really thought it was obvious. Like, why would anybody even consider that? So I thought I was being funny, but not everyone did. So maybe I should change it. So yeah. Anyway, you'd be surprised. A lot of people really do not agree with that position. Like they really think I should add features to send to Pocket Readability, even if it was possible. Because as I said in that tweet that you guys talked about, I don't spend that much time playing with their APIs because I dislike them so much that I try to avoid ever looking at their products if I can help it. With the exception of when I launch a new feature in the app, I usually will launch both of their apps to make sure that either they don't have it, or to make sure that if they do already have it, that I want to make sure mine's different, because I don't want to copy them. A principle they don't always follow.
Yeah.
But anyway,
here's the thing.
So anyway, I think, as far as I know today,
I don't think
it's possible for the magazine to send articles to them. I don't think their APIs support what the magazine needs, which is that the magazine's articles, at least currently, don't exist on any public web page. You can't just log into the site and get them because there's no user accounts. So I don't think there's a way for me to tell Pocket Readability or any of the services for that matter. I don't think there's a way for me to tell them, I'm sharing you this URL, but use this HTML source for it instead of crawling it yourself. I'm pretty sure I can't do that with either of them, but I could be wrong. They might have added that sometime recently. What were you going to say?
I was just going to ask you that. I feel like the potential for this, with you as a publishing mogul, you know, here's the thing. Just look around. There are lots and lots of successful people creating content or curating content, and there's a difference. I really don't like that term, curating.
Yeah, but that's a terrible.
Let's use it. Let's use it anyway. And is there a term I should use instead that you prefer?
No.
Okay.
It's hard to describe that job because it's so broad.
Yeah. And you actually had an article in the magazine about this. But yeah. look at what's going on out there with, you know, we'll take an example, Boing Boing, or Uncrate.com, which my friend runs, or Laughing Squid, which Scott Beal, also my friend, runs. These shows are, I mean, shows, whatever. They're shows. Everything's a show.
Everything to you is a show.
Everything's a show. These sites are, you know, people donate to them, and they have sponsors in the form of, you know, advertisements on the sites, and that's how they make their money. And you know, there are many blogs that do this. There are many sites that do this. And in a sense, they compete because, you know, they're all trying to get people's readerships, but they all exist. And if you think about it, and this goes back to what you were saying earlier, is that being a publishing mogul, as you now are, you're in a position to say, look, as long as I have really good content, people will come to read it. People will come to get that content. And this is going to be the main way that they get the content. And that's going to provide, and the chances that people will at some point say, oh, there's no good content there anymore. I think this goes back to your fear comment. You're just going to make sure that never happens. You're going to make damn sure that there's always good content there. And as long as there is, people will find it and people will go there. And to me, that's a much more secure place to be than, you know, as you were also saying, fighting in a space that's very a tough space. I'm not saying that like it's a bad place to be in, because I think that's a good fight and I think you could win that fight. So I'm confident in you. But being in a publishing mogul just has a kind of a ring to it, and it seems based on your track record of building something and you know, you read what we read kind of thing, we can trust you to find the good stuff. We can trust you to put it out there in front of us. So this, to me, and what I was going to say before, was it's a no-brainer in that sense. This is just the perfect thing. And when you look at it, you're like, man, why didn't he do that before? And that's, I think, a good sign of a good idea, right? When you see something and you say, wow, why didn't we do that before? Why wasn't this there already? That's the sign of a good idea.
Right. And that's by the way, that's the reason I was so secretive about this.
Yeah.
And like, I've already had complaints from people who want more diversity in the authors. Okay, I've published 4 articles. And I've already had complaints from people saying, why is this the same old people that we keep, you know, it's all the Mac nerds and it's the echo chamber and there's no women and all these other complaints. And first of all, give me a break. It's 4 articles so far. Second of all, I went to my trusted friends for this. I went to people I knew before, because I wanted to keep this secret. So I will tell you right now, the first 4 issues are all people you've heard of probably, because they're all the Mac bloggers and people I knew that I could go to for this. Because I wanted to keep this as secret as possible. Because it's such an obvious thing in retrospect. Now that I did this, a lot of people have said, rightfully so, oh my God, this is so obvious in retrospect. I'm amazed this didn't already exist. And I was too. I also thought it was obvious in retrospect. I also was amazed it didn't already exist. And so I wanted to make sure mine existed before someone else jumped on it. You know, this is a huge opportunity. And I wanted to own it. Simple as that. I am not ashamed of that. I'm not going to try to be modest here. I wanted to own this great opportunity. And by keeping it secret, it helped me do that. So that's why the authors are who they are for the first 4 issues. And I would love to have more diversity and more people you've never heard of and more different types of writers. I'm planning on doing that. However, I didn't know that type of person to go to during the pre-release months. So now I will be doing that. And that's, you know, to answer a question I believe you asked on Hypercritical, I am accepting.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you that
for anybody.
Yeah. So
I'm paying writers very well. I want this to be competitive with print magazines. And I've heard things like $1 a word as like a ballpark of what print magazines might pay writers. And I've just had to ask writers, you know, because I've never been a magazine writer except for that one column in Macworld. So I only had, you know, I had very little reference myself. So I had to really ask professional writers, like, you know, what do people usually pay writers? I have no idea. Which is funny, you know, it's a funny position to put them in. Like, please invent your own salary. but yeah, like I want this to be financially healthy enough that I can pay writers competitively with print magazines. And we'll see, you know, as I said, like, well, I don't even know what the income will be yet until like a month in, when I'll see how many people actually stay on and pay and how that works. But I think it'll work. I think I'll be able to be that competitive. Like, I think I'll be able to actually pay competitive magazine rates.
That'd be great. And by the way, competitive rates are not, that sounds really good, but competitive rates are actually, you know, I mean, it really is a competitive business, and being able to do that, that says a whole lot.
Right, because I want to be able to get the good writers. I want to be able to publish great content. And by me getting out there first, with this kind of thing, I think. By me getting out there first and getting enough subscribers and getting enough attention, I'll be able to do that, I think. And if that's the case, then it'll be self-reinforcing. If I can get the good writers, I'll get the subscriber base. And as long as the subscriber base stays big enough, I'll be able to pay the good writers good rates. I have no interest whatsoever in doing like the very common cheap online publishing model of, well, you should really write for me for self-promotion. And, you know, we don't have to pay you that much because we're giving you so much exposure. I think that's crap.
Mm.
I think people should be paid what they're worth.
And get the exposure.
Yes. And that's the other thing. So the magazine, I want this to promote the hell out of the authors. So the authors have this big name at the top. They have big bios. In a future version, I'm going to try to add following support to follow them right from there on Twitter and app.net if they have either of those things. I want to promote the authors like crazy, and I want to pay them well because I'm not in the business of trying to cheat people. I think people should be paid well. I am an author, and I just feel good about that. And I feel like, you know, you can say things like what Readability tried with paying authors. That was a noble experiment. It didn't work in practice. I'm kind of tired of trying to like beat around the bush and try to experiment with different ways to support writing and different ways to support authors. I'm doing it the oldest possible way. I'm paying them, and then I'm publishing their stuff, and other people are paying to read it. That's how you support writers. I mean, it's a really, really simple solution. It's a very simple business model. I'm paying authors good rates to publish things. I would love it if this could actually be like a significant part of somebody's writing income as a professional writer. I would love that. That's what I'm trying to do here. I'm not trying to publish 50 posts a week and have them each pay their authors like, you know, $20. That's not what I'm going for at all. I really want this. I would love for this to be like the Atlantic, you know, or like the New Yorker, like for it to be that level of prestige, that level of quality, even though I probably wouldn't be publishing things as long as they do or the kind of deeply investigative things that they do. I probably won't go there, but, you know, I want this to be on that level because, you know, why do something if you're just going to do it crappily? You might as well do it well, right? So that's my goal here. That's where I'm going with this. So anyway, to that end, I would love if writers would love to get in touch with me with article pitches or even drafts. That would be awesome. I have to figure out how that workflow works. Like, do I make you write a draft first, and then it's kind of like spec work? So that's kind of weird. And yeah, so I got to figure all that out. I have to figure out what people do, and what's common. And to answer a question in the chat room from Scott Newcam. Did Marco actually leave Read and Trust? I was wondering about that. Yes, I did. I left Read and Trust because the founder emailed me and emailed everybody about a month and a half, 2 months ago. Basically, let me just check if this is... I think this is public, but let me just ensure that this is public.
While you check, I'll do our second sponsor.
Yes, it is. Okay. It's... yeah. September 4th, Brett Terpstra posted. It's the Read and Trust magazine. So Read and Trust kind of launched their own. It's a PDF magazine, a monthly PDF magazine. When they emailed saying they were planning to do this, I voluntarily withdrew from Read and Trust. And I told the founder, you know, secretively, I told him, like, I'm going to be competing with you. I don't feel right, you know, doing that and being a member. So I'll voluntarily withdraw. So I don't think badly of them or anything. I didn't feel right being a member and then competing with them because we're probably going to be competing for some of the same writers. So they were, you know, we parted on very nice terms and everything like that. So you want to do the next sponsor and then I'll talk about editing?
Yeah, sure. It's hover.com, simplified domain management. You probably registered a domain that just, you know, they want to upsell you on services because they realize that, you know, you can register a domain name anywhere. So they say, oh, well, again, we'll come on over here and you can get domain protection. You can get, you know, this alert that tells you if someone does a who. You can get all this other garbage. You don't want any of this stuff, right?
Don't want garbage?
No, you don't want the garbage. So instead, what these guys do is they say, we're not going to do any of that. We're just going to make the experience simple and straightforward and honest. And we're going to give you a phone number that's toll free. If you have a problem, you can call us. and we're going to transfer the domain from your other place for you if you want us to, and we're not going to bug you with tons of different things. They're just going to make it simple and straightforward and honest and good. And that's what they do. So you go to hover.com. Go to hover.com/DanSentMe. I'll tell you why in a second. There's a little search box. You type the domain name that you want, whatever.com, .net, whatever it is. Type it in there and it'll tell you if it's available. And if it is, you can register it. You're done. If it's not available, they'll come up with some suggestions. If you just type in a word or a phrase, they'll give you a whole bunch of suggestions on domain names that you can register that are available. Even if they're like owned by someone else and they're put up for auction, they'll show them to you in there. And if you want to transfer your domain from another registrar, which is what I did, you can do that. And it's pretty easy to do it because they'll do it for you. And you get to keep however much time you had at the other registrar. So you got 4 months left. You get those 4 months plus a new year when you do that transfer. They support that. Go to hover.com/DanSentMe or just use the code DanSentMe and you will get 10% off on everything that you buy. They do email hosting as well. And it's pretty cool. It's a good service. I use it. I have a problem, though, registering domains. I register a lot of them. But it's, oh, by the way, they have really cool like DNS management. It's all built in. So go check them out. Hover.com/DanSentMe.
Cool. All right. Speaking of professionalism and paying writers good rates and everything.
Yeah.
I'm also planning on hiring an editor at some point soon. Once again, as I said earlier, I'm not the best copy editor. We'll see how the money works out. But I did plan from the start that once this thing reached a certain number of subscribers, I would seek out an editor.
Share the number.
And okay, I think I have to check my old Solver spreadsheet, but I think the number was 10,000.
Okay. And now you said before that you don't get data about these folks. Will you reveal on in an ongoing way on this show each week? The number of subscribers that you have and all that once you have that data the way you want it?
Probably not.
Okay.
But if the magazine is still in business, you'll be able to tell that it's doing all right.
Right. So that's what we can assume. if we can just kind of say, you know, you're still here, right. So...
And if you can find... if somebody starts on as a full-time editor, then you know I have at least 10,000 subscribers.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, I was basically trying to estimate, like, you know, how much would a full-time employee cost? I don't even know what editors are paid. Although, please don't tell people that when I'm interviewing them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know what a competitive salary for that is, so I'll probably have to ask some friends. And I'm glad to know Jason Snell. He's going to be a good resource for this stuff.
Hi, my name is Jason Snell. I would like to give you some advice regarding how much to pay people.
Yes, he's going to be a good resource.
Yeah, he'll be really good to have.
No, he's been great. He was in issue one. He's been great to work with so far. All of them. I've had some other Macworld authors working with them as well. They are such pros. I got to say, they are real professionals over there.
They really are. That's still one of the.
They're all very nice and extremely professional to work with. Very easy.
That's got to be. That's how you got to set your sights. You know, that's what you want to try to get close to.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, I want this to be a place where somebody who's not yet a professional writer can write something nice. But I also want this to be a place for professional writers to write. Like I want great articles, whether that comes from somebody who does this all the time or not. I want them to come in both ways. I want it to be someone you've never heard of and also really great writers.
Yeah.
And you know, maybe over time, maybe I'll tweak the number of articles. Maybe I'll publish more articles in the future that's mostly going to be limited to or limited by the ongoing difficulty or lack thereof of getting good articles. Like that's my primary concern now is, will I be able to get 4 good articles every 2 weeks? That's my biggest challenge now. So far, it's doing well. Over time, I have no clue what will happen,
mm-hmm.
but so far, it's doing well. And if I think I can sustain that at a higher number than 4 every 2 weeks, I'll raise the number. And then, you know, I'll work the money out somehow. And I also might add features in the future, like, you know, maybe if I thought somebody requested a letters section. And I thought, like, that's basically a comment form, but edited. And that actually might not be bad. But I don't know. There's I'm thinking about all sorts of stuff. Maybe illustrations for each article the way the New Yorker does. Who knows? All these things add overhead. So my hope is that I can hire somebody to have, whether it's their full time job or not, hire somebody to help with the content procuring and the copy editing.
Right.
Because I didn't just launch something I don't want to do. You know, I want to do a lot of that stuff, but I would also love to expand this into more things like illustrations and like more articles every 2 weeks and be able to expand it so that I can make a better publication. And for that, I'm going to need some help. I think I can do 4 every 2 weeks, but anything more than that, I'm going to need some help. So that's the plan for this. I'm laying it out right here. That's the plan is to keep doing this thing and to make it really great. And, people have asked about images, videos. It supports both of those things. There are none planned for the first 4 issues. I can tell you that already. But I do support those things. And Shinohara asked a good question in the chat just now. Any chance of ports to other platforms if it's successful? Maybe OS X or, and people have asked me about Android. So far, I have no plans to go to Android. It's not any kind of political statement. It's just that I don't think I'll be able to make enough money there. It's simple as that. You know, I can look at Instapaper on Android and I can get some idea of what it might be relatively. And I can look at other things. Other people have written about Android and published about their numbers and everything. And I just don't think, you know, I think I said in the fact, like I'm sure I could get some revenue there, but I'm not sure how much profit I could get. And that's an important distinction. Supporting Android is very expensive. And the sales numbers are way lower than you would expect given its installed base. Just like those, you know, how Gruber always posts about those web browsing stats always show that Android phones are very disproportionately low on their web browsing representation compared to their market share, which basically strongly suggests that relatively few Android owners are using their devices as tiny computers. You know, it's more people who are just using them mostly as phones, the way people used to use flip phones. So, you know, Android, it has that problem of like, there are a lot of Android devices out there, but it's very expensive to support them and you might not actually make enough back to make that worthwhile. So I'm pretty sure I don't plan to go to Android for the foreseeable future, probably forever in all likelihood. I might at some point make a Kindle edition because they have their own whole magazine store there. I haven't yet decided on that. I have barely looked into it, honestly. I haven't had time yet. These are all things I'll explore. You know, if the staff grows, I'll explore those more readily then. But for the most part, for now, I plan to only support iOS. And this hopefully will be a really great time to be supporting iOS this winter if an iPad mini or Air or whatever gets released next week for a low price. We'll see, though. All right. And one more minor thing I wanted to get in this week as opposed to the future. In the future, I'll be discussing some design decisions I made as a preview here. But the launch, a lot of people have asked about the launch, how I very quickly got a 101 out. And the reason why I use the expedited review request, that anybody can do that. They might not grant it, but you can do it if you want to. That's how I got it out that quickly. The bug was, as you talked about on Hypercritical, the bug was that if you subscribe with the same Apple ID on two different devices, which, you know, most commonly, if you have an iPhone and an iPad, this would be the case, then it wouldn't let you subscribe on the second one. And the reason why, on a technical level, I'll tell you all the reason why, is that I had borrowed a lot of the in-app purchasing code, the processing code from Instapaper. And Instapaper does not have a restore purchases button. And the reason why is because it doesn't really need one, that the subscription state is really stored server side on your user record. So, and those are the type of item that is in-app purchase wise can be bought multiple times. So you can buy like multiple subscription items on Instapaper because it's just like this, each one just adds time to your subscription. Auto-renew subscriptions don't work that way. You can only have one instance of each subscription active on each Apple ID. So when the second device would attempt to add one to your account, it would fail. And I was not doing restore purchase functionality there. That was my mistake. And so I had to very quickly issue an update that first tries to restore purchases if you have them when you try to subscribe, and then tries to add it if you don't. And the reason why I didn't catch this in testing, the auto-renewing subscriptions behave weirdly in testing, but it's really for a good reason. In the sandbox, the development sandbox that you're accessing for the receipt validation and everything else for all the purchase handling during development, the subscriptions that last, say, a month or two, in the sandbox only last like 5 minutes or 3 minutes or 10 minutes. And it depends on, there's some table that matches them up, but it's like a 1 month subscription will last like 3 minutes or something like that. And so when you're testing, the whole idea of this is so that you can test your expiration code. You can test for renewals. You can test, you know, what happens when the subscription expires without waiting like a month or a week during development, because that would suck. So the problem was that when I'm testing, when I was testing all this stuff on multiple devices, I just never actually hit that condition, which is now, you know, that's a flaw on my part. I never hit the condition where two things were using the same subscription on the same Apple ID, because I would never test it on two devices, on two separate devices with the same test user within 3 minutes. And because like I'll have different test users, so I can have different currencies and I can see how they work out and everything. So that condition just never came up in testing. So that's why that happened. That's why that was the bug. I issued a fix. It got approved. That's what happened. All right. You want to do one more sponsor?
Yeah. Seems like a good time. Final sponsor, Squarespace.com. Everything you need to make an amazing website. We're actually working on something here at the headquarters this morning. A new Squarespace thing will be coming out with soon. And while we were up there in New York last week, we visited their office. They've got a cool office. I forget who it was, but somebody says, maybe it was Hattie, somebody said their office is just like their site. Like, it's clean. It's got this modern feel to it. It is so cool. It was so great to meet these folks. You know, you meet the people behind the services that you use and the stuff that you like. It was just really, really cool. And they're great folks. And it's nice to see how all this comes together. And these guys really, really do care so much about what they do. And they work so hard to make it. And I think it shows, because Squarespace is pretty awesome. That's what we use for all of our blogging stuff. Use it for our websites. We use it for tons of stuff. People sometimes ask if 5x5.tv is powered by Squarespace. It's not. That's my own custom thing. But Marco, have you ever been in the Squarespace office?
No, actually, I haven't.
No. It's pretty
cool. It's in New York, right?
Yeah, it's in Soho, as you would say. And they have this new thing. It's called Layout Engine. This is their page builder. You can create custom layouts for all of your pages in like a couple seconds, and you do it all with drag and drop. But if you don't like that, you're some kind of fancy pants developer like probably we have in the audience, you can check out one of their templates with Git, and you can completely customize it and just push it right up. And it is the most amazing thing. You can do it with SFTP too if you're not like a Git fan. And all of this stuff is built in now. And if you switch your account over and you're using a developer account, developers.squarespace.com, by the way, if you do that, then the whole time that you're in development mode, they don't charge you. Obviously, the site's not public, only you can see it, but they're not going to charge you if you're not actually producing stuff, if you're not actually publishing. And yeah, you know what? I like to have a direct relationship. I like to pay for the services that I use, and that's the way Squarespace works. You pay $10 a month. That's their standard plan. $20 a month for the unlimited plan. And you sign up for a year, you get 20% off. 2 years, you get 25% off. But no matter how long you sign up for, you're going to get 10% off. If you use the code Dan sent me 10, because it's October 10th month, Dan sent me 10. Then go to Square. Either way, even if you just want to check it out, you want to learn more, support the show. It's a great way to support the show. Squarespace.com/5x5. Go there, support the show. Use Dan sent me 10, get 10% off. That's it. Great guys. Little Ryan. Little Ryan really is little, by the way. I mean, he's super tiny. Cute kid. Really tiny. You would just put him in your pocket. So thanks very much to Squarespace.com.
All right. So one last question that John Syracuse just pointed out to me that I have not answered yet from his show, and this is actually worth talking about, not that the other ones weren't, is whether I'm using the Instapaper text parser for the link preview pop-ups in the magazine. And the answer is no. The reason why, this is something I... And by the way, I should point out that those link previews, that feature already exists in Instapaper, but only in a few cases, only for footnotes where it pops up the footnote content, and for Wikipedia links and dictionary definitions. I use a similar code base there to show that little popover on iPhone and et cetera. So on the magazine, when you tap a link, it shows you a little popover or a slide up pane on the iPhone with title, author, date, and little summary. All of those things I'm configuring manually in the CMS for each link.
Hmm.
The CMS sends down a JSON dictionary of those links with each article, and the article simply looks it up and shows the content. And the reason why... Now, I am using a very basic text parser in the CMS to auto-populate those fields when I first configure them in an article. But then I edit them myself. And there's a few reasons for this. Number one, I wanted to have more of that business separation here. It was complexity that wasn't really needed to bring over, you know, the whole newspaper text parser or to have it access it on the back end. That was just more complexity that I didn't need. The other thing is, I've wanted to add this feature to Instapaper for a long time, actually. And Syracuse has, you know, suggested that would be very useful. I've wanted to add this feature to Instapaper forever, where every link has a little preview. Hold on. All right. Oh, too much talking.
You okay?
All right. Yeah, just...
You need to lay down?
Yeah. Anyway, I wanted to add this feature forever to Instapaper, but the problem is that to really do it well, I'd have to either fetch them dynamically, which is probably how I'll end up doing it. So when you tap it, it fetches it on demand, but then it doesn't work offline. And there's like a little delay. Or to fetch them when you download the article. So to basically pre-fetch all of those things. And I haven't done that yet because it would just be a very big strain on the text parser infrastructure to have that for every downloaded article to be also fetching, or at least fetching cache versions of all of those other link previews, just to have those little popovers that most people would never see. So I will eventually bring that over to Instapaper in some way, I think, but probably not like this. With the magazine, I control all the content. So I have the luxury of being able to edit that myself. So a lot of times the automated summary of a page isn't very good. And so I can actually edit that myself, and I can say, all right, well, here's what the body text parser fetched, but I'm going to correct that a little bit. I'm going to delete this sentence. I'm going to add another sentence over here from, you know, or like, you know, it pulled from the wrong paragraph, or it kind of didn't get the gist of it. I can edit all this by hand. So I am. And the CMS does the complexity of like making it convenient for me to both edit that and to pre-populate it with likely correct values. But I have the luxury here of editing. So that's all by hand for the most part. And that's the answer to that. And yeah, so I will at some point add something like that to Instapaper, maybe, but I'll have to figure out how to implement that in a way that I can actually pull off that doesn't have big downsides. All right, I think we're done.
No more questions from John Syracuse.
I don't know, John, are you satisfied?
I mean, we won't stop until he is satisfied.
I don't know about that.
Well, that's my rule. Till he has been satiated, we continue. Whatever that means.
Yeah. And this is also, he said, he's satisfied. All right. This is also like, you know, my luxury of editing here, as he says, this is something I've never had with Instapaper. Like, I've never had the luxury of predictable content. So I've been able to make a few decisions based on this. Like, I've been able to, like, you know, add personality to the app, add colors, make my font choices, like add personality in ways that, like with Instapaper, you kind of have to have a neutral personality because you don't really know what people are going to be reading. People could be reading, you know, a very happy story, a very sad story, something serious, something funny, something that's not even a story at all. That's like a web page, like for information, Wikipedia, scientific journal articles, like, you have to be able to accommodate all that. So you have to be very neutral in your design and a lot of your choices. With the magazine, I know what's going to be in it. I'm controlling what's going to be in it. And so I have the freedom. But by having the restricted content, And by having that content all go through me, like in a manual human editing way, I have the freedom to have better features for some of these things. So that is actually really, really kind of nice. And I'm really enjoying that in a lot of these ways. So that's it. And yeah, I guess that's it.
That's all you got.
That's all for this week.
All right.
Next week, I'll go into some of the design choices and inevitably all the follow-up that I'll have from everyone's reactions this week.
Right. Well, cool. Well, thanks for sharing all that here. It's too bad we didn't get to announce it here, but this was probably even better.
Yeah, I think so.
All right. So you can go and follow Marco in several different places. You go to marco.org to read the stuff he writes. You can go to twitter.com/MarcoArment, A-R-M-E-N-T. You can go to alpha.app.net/Marco. And anywhere else you want to send the folks?
I guess that's pretty good.
All right. Well, I'm Dan Benjamin on Twitter, Dan on the Alpha thing. And thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next week. Have a good one.
Thanks. You too.